Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Communities United, along with Out for Justice and the No Boundaries Coalition, host a mayoral candidates forum focused on the issues that affect ex-felons and ex-offenders. It was held at the Douglas Memorial Community Church. In March, 40,000 Marylanders who were previously disenfranchised because of felony convictions received the right to vote under changes to the Maryland state law. Baltimore mayoral candidates Catherine Pugh, Sheila Dixon, Carl Stokes, Elizabeth Embry, David Warnock, DeRay McKesson, and Joshua Harris joined us for that forum that focused on the issues for newly enfranchised people. I moderated the forum along with Eddie Conway, former Black Panther leader and co-author of Martial Law, The Life and Times of a Baltimore Black Panther, who is now executive producer at Real News Network's Baltimore Bureau. We played the first part of the conversation last Friday. We started off with candidates answering a question from Eddie Conway about diverting funding from downtown development and using it instead for funding projects in the inner city. And just to note, some candidates had to leave early to attend other mayoral events scheduled for the same night, so you won't hear all the candidates in this segment. But please go to thesteinershow.org to hear the first part of the broadcast, which we aired last Friday. Joshua Harris.
So the basis of my platform is understanding that the single greatest issue in Baltimore City politics is distribution of capital. Who gets it and who doesn't get it? And right now, there's millions of dollars now and billions over the years that have been flowing to people, including money that is given by the city and by the state to hire ex-felons. But those people who are hired aren't able to climb the ladder. They're given the jobs at the bare minimum. They hold the stop signs and they sweep up the trash. And they're supposed to be being taught skills so that they can climb their way up the ladder to really be able to earn a living wage. But that doesn't happen in many cases. And we've seen it time and time again. And so again, this comes with making sure that the city is partnering and establishing, taking those dollars, diverting them back into the community, which is what we're working to do in West Baltimore, to establish a training academy that would partner to begin to teach the skills so that you don't have the excuse that you don't have qualified individuals, because we know that we're training qualified people. You don't have the excuse now to have this person just holding a stop sign, because we know that they have the skill set to go do this work. We have 40,000 plus vacants in Baltimore City. We have miles and miles of lead pipes that our water is currently running through that need to be replaced. These are the jobs that exist that we're outsourcing to Baltimore County, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Delaware. And so if we take the first investment and invest in the people here and redivert our capital to the neighborhoods to do that, which we can do, it just has not been done. If we take that and make that investment, we will not only create thousands of jobs, we'll boost our local economy, and we'll have people who will be earning living wages and have the ability to know what it feels like to be a homeowner, to know what it feels like to not have to worry about where your next family meal is going to come from. And I'll cut off there because I could go on and on.
David Warnock.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'll say is you make a great point. I mean, TIFs, pilots, they've all been around the Inner Harbor. They've all been with developers that have made meaningful, significant, big campaign contributions to a number of people in this race. And I think everybody ought to look at the campaign contributors to everybody's campaign, because these developers get what they pay for and have for years. Now, what I've done for years at the Center for Urban Families is put people to work, get people ready to work, and remove the barriers that people have to employment, one of which is automatic expungement of non-convictions. There's 30,000 people with expungible non-convictions in Baltimore. It costs $30, and you have to go through the courts to get these expunged. We have the easiest to access database of charges and convictions of any state in the union. And ban the box is fine, but employers routinely hit that website and discriminate against people that have expungible non-convictions. We had a bill for the last 2 years in Annapolis to get it done. It hasn't gotten across the finish line. I'll give Senator Pugh credit. She's been supportive along the way, and we need to get it finally done. The other thing we need to do is we need to look hard at programs to help our returning citizens with the punitive nature of our child support collection policies. Because when you're a returning citizen and you are in arrears on your child support, this is child support that's owed the state to reimburse the state for welfare payments made to the mother of your children. And there are 6,000 young men coming back to Baltimore every day, every year. Many of them are in arrears. We need to get them in programs that help them get that child support taken care of. Because if you're in arrears, you can't have a driver's license. 65% of your W-2 income is going to get garnished. If you open up a bank account, it's going to get garnished. And the collection of it's been outsourced to a for-profit company by the name of Maximus that literally gets a piece of the action. And if you ask yourself, and I published an op-ed on this 2 years ago in the Baltimore Sun, why the drug trade's persistent in our city, I got to tell you, if I was 24 and I was coming back and I didn't have W-2 income, I couldn't have a bank account, and I wanted to see my kids, I might be doing the thing that got me in trouble in the first place. We need a mayor that can create jobs but understands why people aren't getting them.
Councilman Carl Stokes.
Thanks, Eddie. As mayor, I would redirect just millions of dollars to the outer harbor of the communities. I call them the outer harbor. You know, I say, and I've been one of the guys, matter of fact, the only guy in Harbor Point and some others who said no. No, don't give the wealthy more money. Give it to the TIFs in this country were set up for neighborhoods, small developers who could not normally get enough cash personally or through private financing to go into blighted communities, communities of high unemployment, communities that needed a kickstart, but to give it to small developers who are willing to take these risks. But the city would be supportive of them. And now it is turned upside down. And the money only goes to the wealthy. I wouldn't even negotiate with the wealthy on TIFs downtown, along the harbor, along the point. There would be no TIFs down there. The TIFs would only go into the distressed communities, period. That's in the title, distressed communities only. So I would incentivize, give subsidies as needed, only for the communities in need. And we would be able to change those communities because there are many small developers who would take pieces, chunks of the community, and make it happen. We don't have to bring in just one wealthy guy to change the community. We can change it inside of the community with those who are part of the community.
We want to know, and I want to try and make it really clear, would you consider making a program that would hire a person that's addicted so that even though in their addiction and then getting clean, that because if they're working and getting clean at the same time, it motivates them more. So would any of you consider that? So that's what I'm saying, changing the face of addiction.
So, very quickly, so we can get to the other. Let the candidates answer this question first.
Yes.
Joshua.
Yes. We have to begin to treat it as a public health issue and help people to get over the barriers. And let's be clear that this is already what has happened in the suburbs, in the communities that weren't predominantly poor and black. And so this is the model that is used. And so it's something I'm definitely willing to take steps towards and create that program.
Senator Catherine Pugh.
When we look at it from a health perspective, yes, you have to, because we don't tell people who are sick that they can't come to work. You know, we don't tell you if you have diabetes, you can't come to work. We don't tell you if you're suffering from cancer, whatever you're suffering from, that you can't come to work. So, yes, I absolutely. But more importantly, I always tell folks that when I went to Israel, for example, and I stayed in a kibbutz community, and it was about communal treatment and job training and getting people to work. When I look at what's happening at the MVET Center downtown, where we deal with homeless veterans who come to, you know, who are looking for not just a place to live, but are looking for work, we don't penalize them, so I don't think you penalize folks who are suffering from addiction because it is a health issue, and that's how we want people to be treated, and more importantly, we want them to be able to work.
DeRay McKesson.
And I agree. So both of my parents were drug addicts, and my father raised us, and I can think about people in my own family that would have benefited from being able to work through their addiction while they were getting through the process. And I saw people put their lives back together. It is not only making sure that we have programs like this, but it is also about inpatient treatment. It's about making sure that we have a comprehensive program so when people need to go to treatment, they can do it. But you're right, that people need jobs as they go through the treatment process.
Elizabeth Embry.
So I think your question is brilliant, and it's actually cutting edge, and it's where we should be. Because as has been said, addiction can be a lifelong disease, and it's something like diabetes that is not something that should be an impact to getting employment. In fact, all the best data shows that if you give someone a pathway and hope and a plan and a structure and a job, you're more likely to help them succeed in treatment. So I think what you're saying is absolutely where we should be, and everything supports that.
Brother Bay.
My name is Brother Bay. I'm the founder of Fox Oak, which stands for Fraternal Order of Ex-Offenders. I have a specific question. You look at the Mayor's Office of Employment Development, once Danny Davis on the federal level passed money for Second Chance Act, they started calling it the Reentry Center. And what would you do to change the outcome? Because for real, those of us know, the outcome is the damn attendance sheet. You know, why is it that you never hear the people who went through there successfully, got jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And there's a conspiracy, and most of the people who are in local government are complicit of it. Once again, the outcome for the reentry center is the damn attendance sheet. Anywhere from 1,500 to 2,500 people go through there a month, but you don't see 25 people that say they successfully went and their lives have changed because they are employed. Address that if you be the mayor.
Good question. So right, Elizabeth?
I couldn't agree more. The outcome has got to be our people employed. And looking at wages also, are we seeing an increase in wages over time? So it's not just employment, it's also an increase in earning. And those are the only measures that make sense for the Mayor's Office of Employment Development. And I agree with you, we've not had that practice for a long time.
Ray McKesson.
I agree with you, too, that the attendance is not a good metric. It's the wrong outcome, that the outcomes have to be about employment, but also about skill development. Do people have more skills after they've completed the program than they did before? And do people have a job that they can actually apply those skills and earn a living wage or a high wage in?
Senator Catherine Pugh.
And I talked about it a little bit earlier. I really think we ought to be doing the job and paying people on the job to train, because then we can really measure whether or not they're actually working. Instead of just training people and then finding the job, let's put people on the job and train them and pay them while they're training. That's how I want to turn the Office of Employment Development around.
Joshua Harris.
Yes, job placement has to be the measured outcome for what success is. And so one of the programs that I've worked with and we've had success in PG County, we're bringing here to Baltimore, is the Thrive Workforce Development Program that combines a leadership development component with workforce development, and it's guaranteed job placement upon completion of the program. And that's what we have to change to make sure it's a measuring stick, not just that someone showed up.
David Warnock.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's another great example of how we've got to instill the culture of customer service in city government. The people who are coming there are the customers. The customers. They deserve a better outcome. Attendance isn't the measure of outcome. Getting a job's the measure of outcome. Just like graduation rates aren't the measure of outcome in city schools, graduating kids that have the ability to get the jobs of the future, that's the measure of outcome in public schools. We need to change the whole culture of city government towards a customer service culture. People are the culture.
Councilman Carl Stokes.
Like most of our city agencies, we have to overhaul now MOED and most of the other agencies because we are not geared to outcomes. I'm a small business guy. Before I start the project, I want to know for sure what my outcome is. I want to plan for the outcome. I don't start hoping for a good outcome. I have to know where I'm going before I begin. And in most of our agencies in Baltimore City, we don't have that. And secondly, we don't audit it. We don't monitor it. We don't follow and see if it is succeeding in what we had hoped it would do. So we would go back and revamp and revise.
So let me do this. I want the answers to be a little shorter. I want your questions, because we have a whole lot of folks who want to say something. Perry, what did you have to say?
Mark, can I apologize? I've got to leave to another event. But
I think
we all do.
Before you leave.
Yeah, because we're all going to the street.
Excuse me one second. I'm going to make sure that with the time that's left, the brothers get a chance to speak. But I need to say something.
Yes.
Okay, and I got a question. Because I done heard you talk about adult programs. I done heard you talk about a lot of everything. But I heard you talk about ex-felons. That's who's here. That's who has the vote. What are you going to do? What is your plan, and how long is it going to take you to do something in this city for ex-felons? That's my question.
That's the question.
I thought that's what we were talking about.
David Warnock.
Well, Again, I think that that was a question that was answered asked a little bit earlier, but I'm happy to address it again. We need to create jobs. Jobs that ex-felons can have, right? You know, it doesn't... We need to create jobs by the hundreds. We can do that with our housing stock. You talk about Green Jobworks, the company I created, and I don't know where you got that million-dollar thing we have with the city. We don't have a million-dollar contract with the city. But we do have people that have lead paint and asbestos certifications. And at the Center for Urban Families, we are creating jobs and outcomes for ex-felons all day long and removing the barriers that they have to employment. Creating jobs means first and foremost getting people ready for jobs and removing the barriers that they have to get jobs, and then having a mayor that's committed to creating jobs. Because you're right. You're right. This is elections about what was going on when the cameras weren't running. And the fact of the matter is, 40% of the people in Baltimore City are not engaged in our workforce, felons or otherwise. There's a reason for that. City government can do better.
Yeah.
So I think I sense his frustration. I think that as most ex-felons understand that words are extremely important, and so that there's a difference between ex-offenders and ex-felons, specifically. So an ex-offender can be anyone who has committed any crime, but an ex-felon is someone who has specifically been targeted and has a target on them that prevents them from getting housing, that prevents them from getting employment, that prevents them from getting all sorts of other public services that they should have rights to. And making sure that under my administration, quite frankly, the first step is to begin to hire ex-felons for the city government, which is something that is not happening. And so coupled with creating programs that actually work specifically with ex-felons, working to create with the state level to create felony expungement so that we have opportunities so that they don't have to consistently overcome these barriers is something that I'm committed to doing.
Senator Catherine Pugh.
Well, let me just say this because I think what you're saying is important, but we really came here specifically to address the issue as it relates to ex-felons. And one of the things that we have to be very conscious of is the need to make sure that they are whole. Because I don't think that you should be defined by the title of ex-felons. And what we talk about is how do we integrate them into our communities, into our society, into the jobs and the opportunities. Let's erase the barrier of ex-felon and make sure that people have access to the jobs and the opportunities. You have 77,000 people unemployed in the city, and that includes ex-felons. And so when we talk about creating not just jobs but business opportunities, I don't want a barrier between the title of an ex-felon, because when ex-felons come out of our prison system, and you all know because many of you were there fighting with me, when I said it doesn't make sense that you can't have access to food stamps, can't have access to housing, you want to define what jobs you can have, you can't be a barber, you can't be a stylist, it doesn't make sense. So part of that change has to take place at the state level. Many of you went to Annapolis and tried to help me change that, but that's a fight that we will continue to have. But what we want to talk about in Baltimore City, because we have control of Baltimore City, is how do you eliminate the title of ex-felon and allow people with skills and so forth to apply for those jobs. And as you said earlier, ban the box is one thing, but it is me sitting next to you saying, you know what, I think you have the capacity, I think you have the capability, so I'll hire you. Erase the barrier in terms of the terminology and the title that we keep giving folks. You know, if we say we don't want to discriminate, let's not discriminate across the board.
Ray McKesson.
So it is about making sure that we have targeted programs that specifically speak to this community, the ex-felon community, that are focused on skill development. So when people need skills or they want to engage in the education process, that we make that easy for them. That also home ownership has to be a part of it. How do we make sure people have assets to leverage? And right now, there are not programs that allow that to happen. And the third thing is about the transportation issue. We need to make sure that the mayor has control and can actually do things to make sure people get to jobs and that people in the ex-felon community actually have access to those resources.
So wait a minute, let me do that. Some of these guys got to go. So what I like to do is get 1, 2, 3 people that say something right in a row, so you hear what they have to say, because you need to hear the voices of the people in this audience. Wait a minute. So, sir, Sim, I got it. Very quickly.
I hear you talk about expelling. I hear you talk about jobs. But I want to hear you say, what are you going to do about that place? What something? Now, Fort Covenant, they've been all that money in Fort Covenant, where the city need schools for the kids, and they need jobs and everything else. What I'm talking about is that they want to take Fort Covington, Cherry Hill, and Brooklyn to make a place for 4.1. And here we got kids need education and schools and can't read. My question is this. Are y'all giving us the, lip talk.
Lip service.
What we need from you is promise. The three promises is this. The kids, the offenders who's in jail come out, or educated body in there, and the third thing is housing. We got housing, and housing should be upgraded where we won't have nobody sleeping in the street.
All right, here's my question. You are supposedly involved in a lot of programs geared towards helping ex-felons, to include the citizens of Baltimore. If you do not become mayor, will you still be involved in these programs to help the people? If so, where do you see yourself after the election? And if you become mayor, will you implement some of the ideas or solutions spoken by the other concerned candidates?
Sir?
Yes. My name is Herbert Eaton, and my family been involved in politics in Baltimore since Perrin Mitchell and everybody. Matter of fact, my lawyer, Edward Smith. My question is, I've been trying to become a longshoreman for 7 years. The president and them got to fighting about money missing. My lawyer was going to pay for my union card, but he to follow the money trail, they wasn't going to put me to work. I'm saying, I'm local 3-3. I was trying to become a longshoreman. I've been home 7 years. What y'all going to do about people who've been here off, ain't been in no trouble in 7 years? And every time I go get a job, they go back to when I was 20. I'm 52.
These are good questions. All right, so some quick thoughts from what you just heard. We're going to come over to this side. You're next, bro.
Elizabeth Embry.
And I could stay here all night. I would like to hear from everyone. I apologize. I have another commitment. But can I just say, forgive me, and I'm happy to come back and talk to you one-on-one, but I have to leave. My commitment is lifelong. I've spent my life in the city working on the problems that affect the city. I will continue doing it, whatever happens in this race, helping the next administration, or going back to my job at the Attorney General's office and fighting to make the city safer. Thank you for having me. These issues couldn't be more important. I'm grateful to be here, and I'm sorry I have to go.
Ray McKesson.
So I'm committed to these issues in policy and thinking about what solutions look like. My platform was the leading platform that helped other people think about the solutions differently.
Folks,
so I remain
you can't hear the answers.
I remain committed talking. To these issues, and I plan to stay committed to them.
Senator Catherine Pugh.
As a state senator, I've been working on these issues. I've been working on these issues, and I'll continue to work on these issues. When I was a city council person, I worked on these issues. I will work on these issues, and I will continue to work on these issues. But more importantly, what I've also done is you've heard some great suggestions of people on the stage. And I've incorporated those suggestions into some of the things that I'm doing now in Annapolis. When we talked about, for example, the high school, the adult high school, I've incorporated that into my plan. And we've got legislation passed to do that. And I'm committed to working with everyone and anyone who wants to continue to move this city forward. And I've worked with different groups, and I see folks out here who have been my friends for decades, whether it is expungement, getting food stamps, creating jobs, getting people to work, improving transportation, creating business opportunities, and erasing the title between ex-felons and those who work in our city. We're all a part of one city. If we're going to be a great city, it is about lifting the least of us so that we lift all of us. We cannot move this city forward just focusing on one part of our city or another part of our city. We have to focus on everyone who lives in the city. And we must be inclusive of this population because this population continues to grow in our city. And more importantly, we need you to help us to divert folks from behaviors that end up allowing them to be incarcerated. You know the problems. You've defined the problems. You work with people who have problems. And many of you in here are not only advocates, but you're working with groups and organizations in the city. So we need to support your efforts. And more importantly, we need to include you in our decision making. And I tell people good ideas become great ideas when you listen to others. And that's part of, and I think my colleague over here said it earlier, part of this is listening and hearing from you all what it is you think that we're not doing and what it is that we must do to be more inclusive.
Joshua Harris.
So one of the things that was brought up in the question will be addressed through systems management. The city is really ineffective with managing its systems and its money. And so we need a leadership that's going to be accountable, responsible, and transparent to not only put structures and protocols and policies in place to ensure that our returning citizens or ex-felons are included and being hiring, but leadership that's going to put systems in place to go back and check and double check and recheck to make sure that the companies that we're contracting with through the city and the agencies are actually hiring ex-felons and not just giving lip service, which is something that happens all too often. Secondly, he asked about Port Covington and that TIF. I'm really excited that people are talking about TIFs now, but I've been talking about TIFs for the last year, and I am the only candidate that spoke up against the TIF before this, which was given away to the University of Maryland Biopark, which the community specifically requested establishing in the Poppleton Training Academy and including the community to begin to create and train people for the jobs that exist for that project that's going to be built. No one else has made a statement about it or has peeped a word about it, and I'm also the only candidate that has released a statement about Port Covington and how this is an opportunity for us to show whether we're serious about creating one Baltimore or is it just something that we give lip service to that will continuously be thwarted by institutional expansion and quest for profit margins. And this is the perfect opportunity for us to say, fine, you want Port Covington, you want $500 million, we want a manufacturing plant right here in Baltimore, and we want to make sure that you're hiring ex-felons and our citizens right here in the city. Fine, you want Port Covington, we need two rec centers, two, three, four, five rec centers redone, because you're asking for $500 million. Is going to be three times that amount, and no one else has said anything about that or released a statement about it. I'm the only candidate that has.
Councilman Carl Stokes.
And so as mayor of the city of Baltimore, by executive order, I am going to guarantee the same civil rights to ex-felons as every other citizen has at this moment. So no discrimination in housing, no discrimination in loans, no discrimination in jobs, no discrimination. We will protect all of our citizens fully by executive order, if not by the law of the land. It will take place. I want to say thank you again also for bringing up Port Covington, as Joshua has been speaking to. I don't even want us to have this negotiation to happen.
Who's got the next question?
I know that we can start doing development in the communities that need it the most right now. We don't have to say, look, we'll give you this if you give us something back. We should say we're going to do this right here, right now, period. We don't have, you know what I most dislike about minority set-aside goals? First of all, the folk that we're talking about ain't the minority. Let's start there. And yet we're saying they are the minority, meaning African Americans, and we have to set goals for them to be full first-class citizens in the city of Baltimore. It doesn't make sense. And these goals are not only not met routinely, but people come before the Board of Vestments and say, I can't find qualified blacks. I can't find qualified women. I can't find people who qualify, and I can't make the goal, and I want a waiver. No more waivers at the Board of Vestments. No more waivers. This is an inclusive city. This is a great city. Of black, white, and brown. But we have separated ourselves too much, far too much, and then we set aside the set-asides. We set aside the set-asides. And we are not taking care of all our citizens. So much or so little that we get into these arguments about we have to take care of the ex-felons, or we have to take care of women, or we have to take care of blacks. Because we're forced to fight among these disparate groups for the crumbs that the few wealthy, and I'm not talking all white folk at all, I'm talking a few wealthy individuals, and frankly, that few is the diverse group also. So, I'm with you, I hear you,
okay.
We're going forward.
Okay. Okay.
We have to take a very short break, but don't go away. When we come back, we'll hear the rest of the panel. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And this morning, we're listening back to a Mayoral Candidates Forum organized by Communities United, along with Out for Justice and the No Boundaries Coalition, focusing on the issues that affect ex-felons and ex-offenders. It was held at the Douglas Memorial Community Church. It featured Baltimore Mayoral candidates, Catherine Pugh, Sheila Dixon, Carl Stokes, Elizabeth Embry, David Warnock, Doreen McKesson, and Joshua Harris. I moderated the debate with Eddie Conway, former Black Panther leader and former political prisoner, co-author of the book Martial Law, The Life and Times of a Baltimore Black Panther, with Dominique Stevenson, who is now executive producer of the Real News Network's Baltimore Bureau. And just to note, some candidates had to leave early to attend other mayoral events scheduled for the same night, so you won't hear all the candidates in this segment. But please go to thesteinershow.org to hear the first part of the broadcast, which we aired last Friday.
My name's Aaron Sims, and I have a few questions. So DNA is information, as you know, right? It gets channeled through from our ancestors on down to us, correct? So how can you bring back the mental stability from the ex-slaves or the ex-descendants of slaves to bring us back into society? We are already a part of the world. How can you bring us back into society mentally?
Councilman Carl Stokes.
So my passion is education. As you may know, I opened the school, two schools for boys, for young men in the city, 6, 7, and 8. Right. And our school was very successful, not only because of the academics, but because of the cultural aspects of it. So that on Saturday afternoons, we did cultural acclimation for our young men at the school. And so you're asking about what we can do to bring back the mentality, bring back the mental capacity from there to now, that which has been taken away. Am I hearing you correctly on this?
Joshua Harris.
So I think that what you're trying to touch on is asking, how do we make sure that we include a component of mental health and spirituality in what we're doing in the school? And I think that begins with education of not just our young people, but education continuously. And so what I'm getting to, you're absolutely right. So when I speak of education, I'm not speaking of the systematic form of education. I'm speaking of education as a continuous, ongoing process. The best education I received came from the bookstore that I grew up in, not in the classroom. So understand that component, how we take those components of spirituality, mental health, as well as the reading, writing, and arithmetic, and ingrain them back into our communities, that is the key factor. We're talking about rebuilding communities. And so we need to have spiritual wellness, we need to have mental wellness, we need to have economic wellness, and we also need to have educational wellness, as well as political wellness. And so making sure that we're creating whole communities is something that I'm truly committed to. So I actually co-founded a nonprofit organization called Holland's Creative Placemakers, and we focus on creating urban revitalization and creating that total wellness, if you will, and doing that by creating an environment of belonging versus disbelonging. And so understanding that we have much more in common than we have differences, different, and using that to build upon, to empower people to do better and be better, whether it be spiritually, whether it be workforce development, whether it be education, or whether it be being civically engaged, but really making sure that we're creating totally well communities is a key factor that is often overlooked, and particularly with the mental health component in the African-American community. So making sure that we are including programs that do just that and work with organizations that are doing that work. And I can go into detail, and we can talk offline about that as well.
Senator Catherine Pugh.
But you know, it really is what we do at the earliest age of our children. You know, because learning actually does begin in the womb. And what he's talking, at least how I'm hearing it, is what are we doing about teaching about our blackness, about our history, about our spirituality, and how we became who we are? Because oftentimes, even in our school system, we don't see our history. We don't see our greatness. And so you wonder why there's this disconnect that in some ways you make us feel as though we're inferior or less than, when in fact if we were rooted back to Africa, I'm talking about African Americans, if we were rooted back to Africa and we're African, not African Americans, we would understand that we were born of kings and queens and that we are great. And it is in that greatness that we become greater. But when you're not seeing that, and you're not hearing that, then you have this inferiority when you're walking around in different communities because you don't feel like anybody understands where we come from. the greatness of who we are as a people, as black people, roots back to our history in Africa. Because we came to this country very different from every other race. You know, we open our doors and we welcome people to America, but yet we came as slaves. But if you root back to our history in Africa, where we were queens and kings, and you teach that to our children, you help to change their psyche and their understanding of their greatness and the greatness of their possibilities.
Former Mayor Sheila Dixon.
So I would just add one other step to interwoving back to civilization for our children, but we have to do it even in our adults. And so when we go back and we talk about going back to civilization, the general public, the white community, has to also see our history so that they realize and know that it was through Africans who created civilization at the very beginning. And I think that's where it gets whitewashed, as he was saying. And so we have to begin to institute that across the board for our children, our babies, at the beginning of life when they are born into a healthy environment, all the way through the curriculum. You know, and it's unfortunate that because of the structures at every level of government who dictates what curriculums look like, et cetera, that we have to begin to take and be responsible for interwoving that with creating, you know, villages where if we're not getting it in school, as we begin to push for it to happen, that we create it in our synagogues, in our churches, in our corner conversations. It has to be interwoven from the very beginning. And to see and have the opportunity, as I have over the years, to travel and see how people and you could were carrying huge stones on their backs to create the pyramids in Africa and Egypt, really confirmed about how rich we are. But I think that we all have a responsibility to incorporate that within our lives and in our curriculum. But the bigger community has to be fed that as well, so they understand. So I would just add that point.
Thank you very much for giving a minute to speak. Where we come from as ex-offenders, where we come from. December 27, 1997 is when I came home. It take a felon to lead a felon, so if you're not a felon or an ex-offender, you can't tell us anything. That's anybody. I can't tell nobody, I can't tell a politician how to go to Annapolis to do legislation, because that's not my lane. I've been home almost 18 years, and I've never used STRIVE or none of these programs that they claim to have in Baltimore City. Personally, I think most of them are worthless because they do not have ex-offenders running with them. That is a lane. This lane here belongs to us. Nobody can, people are speaking to us. That is the problem here. My question is, and I ask each and every one of y'all to name five ex-offender reentry communities that are working with ex-offenders and not no urban of help, not the urban, not the ones we all know, because there are a lot of them that are producing productive citizens, and I'm one of them, and I never used none of the programs. I was raised by felons got me this far. Felons. My question. Give me five and let me know, will y'all, when y'all get hired, put some of y'all strength and power and money into other organizations, and you look at that product, and I can say where we came from is a lot of us did not use that. So we are asking you again, name five, and then let us know, will you be working with them and give us our power back? We don't want you in the building.
Former Mayor Sheila Dixon.
I hear you, but we're going to need to be in the building with you because sense. You're right, and I agree. And let me go back to when I was city council president, and I might have been city council. I can't remember, Brother Bay. You can tell me better than I can. When Brother Bay would come down and advocate for ex-offenders, for individuals who were coming back, and I relied on Brother Bay and people that he brought to the table to help to not only show me a different way, because I had my brother who was an ex-offender. So I saw it firsthand. So I saw the challenges he went through and where he went and how we helped. So it's not like I didn't live with an ex-offender, but I also, in public office, I relied on a person like Brother Bay and others who really helped me to frame.
You are an ex-offender.
No, I am not an ex-offender. Mine was a misdemeanor. So, no, I'm not. Well, you can call it as you want. But let me say this. Let me say this. And so I relied on Brother Bay, who helped me to help to increase and enhance what we did, as well as Druid Heights, who had a program that I was a part of since 1991, and they still are successful. I mean, I can name a couple other programs, but those are just a couple that I've been working with over the years.
Senator Catherine Pugh.
I believe that the program that I am creating for ex-offenders to start their own businesses is not about a program that exists. It isn't. And in fact, it was after listening and talking with an ex-offender that I created the program. And so it is my desire and my hope that working with the Maryland Small Business Development Financing Authority, and believe it or not, Stanley Tucker, is an ex-offender, which is why he was so excited when I said that I've written this program and the legislation got passed. And he's already decided that he will fund those businesses. Now, my hope is that they become very, very successful, because I believe that it's not just about jobs, it's about business creation. And I think, Josh, we hear you say it all the time, that small business is the backbone of this country. So we ought to be looking at how do we help you to create your own business. I see you. You're out there. You're an entrepreneur. When we go to the, what's the place on North Avenue? And we got to buy those scarves. I mean, we buying your scarves. Aren't we buying your scarves? Right. I mean, because you're an entrepreneur. And certainly have worked with Brother Bay, and we've been working on trying to get this magazine done. And we're going to get this resource magazine done. So I can't name five, but I believe that the one that I've helped create it is because I've sat down, listened, heard from you all, and said, you know, I think it's more than a job. I think it's the opportunity to dream the American dream, to own your own business, to buy your own home, to make way for your children and the children who follow them, so that you can have what every other American in this nation has, the opportunity to be your own boss.
Joshua Harris.
So I can't name five programs, but what I do know is that...
Go ahead.
So what I do know is that, number one, a job is much more than a job. It's a person's sense of self-worth. It's a part of how they define themselves. So understanding what being able to be gainfully employed and provide for your family does, because I've seen it firsthand. My father is a ex-felon, and he could not get a job. And so he ended up actually sweeping up and cleaning up a bookstore of someone that he knew. For 2 years, until that person decided they wanted to retire, and then he took over the bookstore. And then he opened up two bookstores, and it became one of the largest black-owned bookstores actually in the city of Chicago, where I'm from. And so understanding that the ability that I agree with you, that it takes an ex-felon to be an example to another ex-felon. And so what that creates to show the possibility of what one can become is huge and tremendous. And so not just with our programs that help our ex-offenders, but with so many of our programs in the city, what we do is we hire these people who are really smart, really heavily degreed, but have no clue how to reach the people that they want to serve or that they're supposed to serve. In order to change that, we have to begin to hire from the communities and from the populations that we are looking to serve if we want to truly be effective and not just give lip service to the opportunities we're looking to provide.
Councilman Carl Stokes.
And I was just finishing up, really listening and agreeing with Brother Joshua here, that in this city, many of the programs that are run to help and support folk in the community are not run by community folk. Not paid. They don't get paid. I know plenty of folks, whether it's Leaders in a Beautiful Struggle or other programs, who have a day job to take care of their family needs, their children, themselves. And after they get off from their day job, they then go into community and they mentor, or they run programs. They work healthcare programs. They do programming that works for young people and for the community. But they don't get paid for those jobs, because someone else gets paid outside of the community to run these programs, social and otherwise, in the community. So I agree with you, brother, that programs that are for ex-felons, ex-offenders, should in most cases be run by those who are such.
All right, thank you. Hi, my name is Reginald Smith Bay. I'm with Communities United, and I am an ex-offender. Okay, my problem is this. I've been listening to candidates all night. I've been listening to candidates talk about what they want to do or what they're going to do. but no one really has directly put in concrete words some sort of help for ex-felons. Y'all talked about jobs, but no one has said that y'all gonna make a program that's just for ex-felons or ex-offenders. That's the problem. That's on applications. That is how we get denied help, because that little clause that say, "Are you an ex-offender? Are you an ex-felon?" That's what get us kicked back down to the curb. Housing too. We can't even get housing. What are we going to do about housing for ex-offenders that come out of prison and have nowhere to go?
Councilman Carl Stokes.
And I did speak earlier about removing all of those barriers, so those barriers are not there for when you come out or for life. I did speak earlier that folk who come out, coming back into the world, go into housing. They have a housing situation for them, be it transitional housing, but there will be housing when men and women come back to the world. And I also talked about giving a package of resocialization that allows for them to be able to buy furniture, be able to get started again. I did speak to that a little earlier today.
Joshua Harris.
So I thought that I did speak to it with the program that I'm not saying that I want to start, but what I'm working on doing with establishing the Poppleton Training Academy that will specifically target training ex-felons and preparing them for the jobs that exist here now. Now, one of the ways of financing that project, of course, is through the city's tax incremental financing policies. Again, what we're looking to do. But that is one of the programs that's going to happen, whether or not I'm elected. That's something that's going to happen because there's work that's continuously outsourced right now to Baltimore County, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Delaware that should be going to the people right here in this city that want to work and that need to work to provide for their families.
Former Mayor Sheila Dixon.
Let me just touch on three areas. One, I was the first to remove the box for housing and city jobs, not through the private sector, but city government. And you will find that in all of our agencies, you will find a large group of ex-offenders. City government, first and foremost, employs ex-offenders. But let me take it a step further. In my jobs and prosperity plan that I put together on my website, I'm also going to increase the minimum wage for city workers to $15 an hour. And the way that we're going to do this is, and I've already have been able to identify how to do it within the budget, the same way the current administration has identified the $10 million for trash cans. Secondly, there's I'm just talking about what they use the money for. The second thing that I did was successful, and that we were working with ex-offenders, is through Baltimore Rising, what we called it family strengthening. Well, we had men and women who were going in the prisons, working with individuals before they came out, one, to connect them with their families, but two, to help them to put a plan together in order to find housing, in order to find training, or whatever their goals were. It was a successful effort. Part of the problem, what happens is when something is working, it doesn't matter who the mayor is or city council. If it's effective and it's working, you build on it. That's the problem here in Baltimore. We put things together. Because the mayor changes, people throw it out instead of looking at it and saying, hey, this is working. How can I tweak it? How can I enhance this? How can I look at the weaknesses? It was an effective effort going on where we worked directly with ex-offenders, bringing them back, working with them with mental issues, as well as their families, connecting them. I believe that that is the route to go as it relates to dealing with systemic issues. That will continue to happen. Third, I'm going to triple. The jobs are here. You know what the issue is? It's not about whether or not you're an ex-offender or whatever your situation is. The problem is there's a weakness and disconnect between the job training that's needed and the ineffective programs that don't do training but just say they do training and really get the industry in every area, construction, healthcare, IT, et cetera, port-related, and providing resources, trade, non-trade. I work with contractors right now. Who do they hire? Ex-offenders. The unions want to be able to, and they also do the same things. They want to be able to come back and start doing this construction work. But the problem is, and the truth be told, the why people are coming in from Pennsylvania and all over the other parts of the state and other states is because training is ineffective here in Baltimore, and we've got to do a better job. So I'm going to triple the training money and work with unions, non-unions, and groups. Not, don't come with me with a proposal and say, oh, I want to do this training. You got to show me a plan how we connect. And the industry wants to come in and work with individuals. I could, to this day, give you five resources. I can't give you, it's in my office, but I can, if you email me, I can share with you five different potential jobs that you could actually go and potentially work. If you're going to show up, if you're willing to be trained on the spot, and if you're willing to take what it does in order to do the follow-up. I know that I not only am saying this, and I'm not making promises and commitment, I can do this. I know what the need is, what it's going to take, and that's what I'm going to do as soon as April 26th is over and the general election is over.
Short break, but stay with us. When we come back, I'll be talking with Congresswoman Donna Edwards about her run for the Senate. And on our way to break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner.